And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 206. I'm your host, Silas Lindenstein, the host of Black and a Half, the longest-running comedy podcast in Seattle. Probably. Today, I have a great episode for you because I got an interview with editor Nina Erb. She's an Emmy Award winner. She's an editor for the TV show Insecure. In particular, this episode Choices, okay? Episode season 5, episode number 8. For those of you that listen to the show regularly, you probably know that one of my favorite shows is Insecure. Well, it was. It's over now. It ended this last season, a series finale happened a couple months ago. I was sad because one reason I didn't know it was over. It just ended on me. I hadn't been watching news about it, and I was watching and get to this episode that turns out to be the last. I'm like, hold on a second. Why are they wrapping stuff up? Why is something going on here? And it was over. I looked it up and I'm like, well, and I feel like it was a weird time too in the series. Like, I don't know. There was the number of episodes. I thought there would be more. I should have caught it. I think it was the same as other seasons, but yeah. So I don't know is it still my favorite? Do I count it as that? I don't know. It was a great show. It is a show people should be watching. And so I was really excited that I got to work with someone who was a fundamental part of that, Nina Erb. I got to talk to her about kind of like what it's like to as an editor and how she became an editor and all of that. You know, Insecure is one of the shows I put in as an example. I mean, I think it's 5 seasons, so it did fine on HBO, right? But I often hear people talk about how they should be supporting Black works and works of other people of color, right? Especially in the wake of George Floyd and everything, people are extra woke, extra awakened about what they need to be doing, allies. I know because people were messaging me on Facebook to ask if I'm okay. We talked about that here. But we hear a lot of talk about supporting shows of color. But it's amazing to me how few people I know that actually watched this show that, you know, in the Venn diagram often overlaps with the people who say we should be supporting works of people of color. There sometimes seems to be a disconnect that supporting does mean turning on the shows, not just lip service. And I would love it for people to, you know, there's so many shows, so many movies featuring people of color that really need your watch to keep them going. They are solid shows. Some shows give you an insight into Black culture. Insecure was one of those. I think it gave you great insight into Black culture, especially with, you know, it's educated working professionals and who also are Black and have their own cultural experience and different ones, because there's several different women that are running this show or that are stars of this show. It's a good ensemble, even though, you know, Issa Rae was the main character, but there was, you know, she had a great ensemble there. This was a perfect show and a funny show. It's so good that you could be supporting. You could still, you know, even though it's over, you can still go watch it. Say, you know, it's got that Silas seal of approval on it. So I'm saying watch it. I think you'll enjoy it. It does get sexual at times. It does. You should know that. I said HBO. So you know it gets sexual at times. But still, unless you're super prudish, you should watch it. I think you'll enjoy it. Is that my high horse? Is that enough of a high horse for me? Before I get into this introduction. Look, I want to, I do, before I introduce this person, I got to say a big shout out and thanks to our Patreon supporters. You too, for a dollar a month, could join the League of Extraordinary Listeners. You go to patreon.com/blackandahalf and you join there. Or you could become one of our inner circle members, like Tara Wiedner, like Stefan Ward, like Keith Nagel. Join their ranks. Become an inner circle member. There's lots of perks, like I say your name on the air until there's too many. You could join them and become an inner circle member. Anyway, I got to say that. And also, please check out my other podcast, You're Buying a Home with Silas Lindenstein, where I educate and empower home buyers all over the nation. Really, if it's your first time buying a home, if you haven't done it yet or you're even thinking about it, you should check that podcast out. You can check it out wherever you source this or go to yourbuyingahome.com. Now, I was offered this 3-time Emmy nominee, 2-time winner, gifted editor Nina Erb, an ace and Emmy winning editor, for her work. Her work can be seen on HBO's nominated and Peabody Award winning series Insecure, episode Choices Okay, season 5, episode 8, directed by Kevin Bray, in the Outstanding Single Camera Picture Editing for a Camera Series category. Okay, I got to have a whole episode one day about how specific they're getting with the Emmys. Okay, that's funny. A behind-the-scenes look at Insecure episode Choices Okay focuses on the one-er mirror Isa scene that gives new meaning to the term invisible art. To make the scene work, Nina had to manipulate different takes and figure out when to cut so the edits are invisible. A deeper dive into her Emmy-nominated work on this episode can be found online. If you have HBO, that's one of the links. It's one of the behind the scenes. As both an Asian American and a person of color, she is fully committed to advancing stories of others. She is thrilled to be a continuing part of the team showing the reality of life for modern women of color in America. Her work can also be seen on Apple TV's groundbreaking Little America series. As an immigrant herself, she's excited to help shape standout episodes for the series, including The Son, tackling a gay man's struggle for safety and love as he attempts a harrowing immigration to the United States, and The Silence, which charts love among immigrants in a situation where sound speaking is forbidden. She also edited 3 episodes for the HBO coming-of-age series Generation. I am including her bios below, which I'm going to read right now. Nina Erb bio. Nina Erb, ace, is a film... Okay, here's what... It sounds funny when I say it. Nina Ace is like a... It's like Emmy, right? Nina Erb, film and television editor based in Los Angeles, raised in an Asian American immigrant family. Nina's father wanted her to be a doctor and her mother wanted her to be a pianist with the LA Philharmonic. Nina wanted to be Andy Warhol. After graduating with an art degree, a friend brought her to the entertainment industry and she started working in various capacities in production. It was her stint as an associate producer that opened her eye to the impact of editing. It combined her love of photography and storytelling, and she was hooked. Since then, Nina has edited on the productions for the HBO, Universal, CBS, and Apple's, and others. She is experienced in multiple genres, from drama series to feature films, documentaries, and comedy. In 2016, she received her first Emmy Award for her work on HBO documentary series Project Greenlight. Ooh, I love that. In 2020, she received an HPA award and her second Emmy award for her work on HBO comedy drama series Insecure. In addition, she's received 3 Ace Eddy nominations, 2 for Insecure and the other for CW's acclaimed series Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. In 2021, she edited 3 episodes of the HBO coming-of-age series generation. She's currently editing Downtown Owl for Sony and the highly anticipated comedy feature directed by Adele Lim, produced by Point Grey and Lionsgate. That is her bio. She has, this is a wonderful interview. It was great getting to know her, getting to know the details about that bio, because we delved a bit more into that. And I think a lesson for me was how much your life can change with a couple nudges. And what you think you wanted to do, you know, can change pretty drastically once you're out in the real world. And a good discussion on whether film school is something that is necessary. So I think it's a great interview. It was an honor to meet her and spend that little time on Zoom with her. So I bring forth to you this interview with the wonderful Nina Erb for episode number 206.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission.
Big fan of Insecure, and so it was exciting to see that you were nominated for the outstanding. What do they phrase? Outstanding in editing.
Outstanding picture editing.
It's interesting when you go into a TV show as an editor versus like a film. Do you get as much? Because when I got into filmmaking, I had no idea how much power the editor had and like how much involved and how they could save a story or, you know, or do other things to it. When you're in a TV show, is it a different process? Do you have to follow it as much, like more than you do in a film? Can you tell them, no, this is what the story you gave me actually is? Can you do that in a TV show?
They're similar but different, you know, storytelling regardless of the format. But on a TV show, I mean, if I'm doing a pilot, that's much more similar to doing a feature film, because you're working much closer with the producers, the directors, the writer, to kind of create a tone, a pace, a look. Very much similar to you would in a feature film. But if you're coming on to a series like I did with Insecure, they had already established some signature looks, you know, like the use of music, using exteriors of South LA to transition from scene to scene, or like, you know, like a well-placed short-sighted shot to kind of illustrate discomfort or when she's feeling insecure about something. So those are the things that I think if you're an editor coming on to an established series, you should study and know. And ideally, you know, you can always bring your own magic sauce to it, yeah, but it should still be within the recipe of the show.
Right. Does it feel a little more, is it a little more work for you as a, like, does it, for me, when I do have to do industrial commercials here, or not even commercials, just for internal stuff for Microsoft, like sometimes I show up as an actor and I'm like, this is work. This is not a passion. Does TV feel more like when you have to go into someone else's established world, is that a little more work, or do you get the rush that you got from editing other pieces? Or
I mean, I think it depends. I mean, I've been a fan of Insecure for a while before, you know, there was two seasons that happened before I came on board. And, you know, so I was excited about the show. I watched the show. I know the show. I love the show. So for me, it was exciting because I got to be a part of the series that was super special to me. But you know, I think like with any filmmaker, you try to bring a little bit of yourself, regardless of what it is that you're entering into. So,
and what do you think that something is from you? Is it a point of view that you're able to put in there?
I think so. I mean, I'd like to think so. I think, you know, everyone has their own distinctive voice. And for me, you know, the show is special to me because of where it's set, you know, in South LA, and it's kind of where my family and I immigrated to when we first landed in this country. So I know that area in a very different light than how it's been portrayed in the media. Mm-hmm. And so when this show came, you know, came on the scene, I was so excited because it was like, wow, this is the community I know. These are the people that, you know, rallied around us when we're like plopped into a new country and trying to make a new life. And so this is a South LA I know, and I'm excited to be on the show. It's so wonderful that they're shining a really beautiful light on them. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was always very important to make sure that, you know, the shots of South LA would, you know, kind of carry from one location to another. And I would always come up with concepts of like, okay, are we going to start high and go low or go high? Or is this all about being super high because the next scene we're going to be like observing from afar? Or, you know, I would come up with creative ideas like that to kind of infuse into the show. And I don't know, I just, everything about the show was just, I just loved it.
Me too. I mean, I speak about it all the time. I was also hadn't been staying up on the news very well, and I was almost a little devastated the last episode, going like, why is this going so fast? Wait, what are they doing? Are they? No. And I looked it up and saw it was the final seat. I'm like, are you kidding me? I didn't know. Nobody warned me. So I'm curious about your journey to the editor. Like, what did you, was that something you started off wanting to do, getting into filmmaking? Where did your filmmaking journey start?
Oh gosh, I actually have an art degree. I studied ceramics and printmaking in university. And, you know, when I got out, I had some gallery showings and some commissions for murals, but it wasn't really sustainable. So a friend of mine was working in the industry and kind of brought me in and was like, hey, why don't you start in the art department? It's kind of similar. So I kind of bounced around a little bit, realized it's not that similar. It's more like architecture because you're building sets and you're, you know, getting furniture and that kind of thing. So it's not really quite, it didn't really light my creative fire. And so I bounced around a lot until one day I was made an associate producer and I had to work with an editor. And, you know, his name is Sven Nilsson, and he just completely blew my mind. I mean, he showed me how you can change the tone of a scene and how you can craft a story and how you can shape characters. And I mean, seriously, it was like this whole world just opened up, and like that was it. Like there was no turning back after that point. So I learned how to use the Avid, which is everyone uses, and he hired me as his assistant. You know, many, many years later, here I am.
Did you ever go to any traditional school to learn it then, or to learn editing? Did you do like night courses or anything?
No, I just took some classes on the software, the editing, the storytelling, you know, I kind of learned on the job. And I think everyone has an innate sense in them to be a storyteller. And so you kind of just figure out like, okay, this is the art form. I'm going to tell stories with pictures and performances. And so, you know, you learn kind of on the job, or at least I did. I didn't really go to film school in any sense of the word.
I mean, clearly you're now a two-time Emmy winner. So, yes. And counting, we shall say. Like I run into people all the time that think they need to go to film school, or that they are like, oh, they'll teach me nothing. I mean, had you ever found yourself going, man, if I got into film school, I would have got this? Or would you tell someone just get out there and start editing? What would your advice be to somebody, say, just graduated with art degree now?
If I was telling myself,
maybe.
You know, I honestly, I didn't know anything about the film industry when I graduated with an art degree. So I don't know that that would be the advice I'd give myself. But I think now, you know, when I actually mentor a lot of kids out of film school. You know, I feel like if you did go to film school, it gives you kind of a leg up on the lingo and the, you know, wherewithal to be able to talk about the movies and you know, the classics, if you will, and kind of compare them to what's being made now. But I don't feel like that was a hindrance for me, just because I watched a lot of movies growing up, and I continue to watch a lot of movies and a lot of TV shows. I know people don't like to admit that, but I proudly watch a lot of movies and TV shows. And so I feel like I can still kind of, you know, carry a pretty intelligent conversation. So about that, so I don't feel like I need to go to film school. Would I have liked to? Sure. I think it would have been a whole different experience. And I wonder if that would have informed my work now as a, you know, differently, versus how I kind of came about.
Have you had any, when's the last time you had a revelation in editing? What has there been like that some another light bulb went off? Like what have there been moments that does the work change the work that you're seeing change the way you think that maybe a story should be told? Or
sometimes I think, you know, I always let the dailies guide me a little bit. I mean, you go into it, you know what the tone of the scene should be and whose point of view it should be in. But I like to experiment a lot when I'm in there. So what I do is I scrutinize every single frame of the dailies, you know, and I make notes and I start putting the story together as if it, you know, as scripted, if you will.
Yeah.
And then I kind of go, okay, well, this is great. This is working. And then what would this look like if it was being told from another character's point of view? Mm. And I would try to recut it that way. And other times, you know, I'll start from the very end and work forwards and, you know, just to see like what would happen and if I would come up with some kind of unique way that I hadn't thought of before. And I think a lot of it's just, you know, throwing out all preconceived notions and just seeing what happens, you know, if you just explore. So
have you ever demanded that they go shoot something else? Like that you are missing some key element in this story, like without, you don't have to name names or anything, but like, has that happened to you where you've been like, you really need this? Huh?
Demand is a strong word. Okay. I wouldn't say demand, but I would request. I would always call the directors and say, hey, so, you know, here's what I'm thinking for the scene. Like, why are you seeing it this way? If you're not, like, let's talk about it. And it's like, how would you feel if we got a shot of this? You know, and then they would either say, oh, yeah, that was on tomorrow's list, or, oh, right, I forgot that, I'll put it on the list, or, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
But usually, you know, I feel like the directors are pretty good with getting things. You know, every once in a while, if something is skipped, it's purely because of probably schedule.
Yeah. Okay. And you are, when you said you got here with your family into South L.A.,
Early
on. Where originally from?
Taipei, Taiwan.
Maybe Taiwan. Okay.
Yeah.
Has that? I mean, it sounds like you've been here virtually your life, though, right? It sounds so. Is it your parents that influence you? Like culturally, are you at home? Is it more? Is the culture of Taiwan more at your home than in the rest of your life? I always find just like, I'm not, my ancestors, I don't even know where they're from, right? Like, as an African American, I don't know where my culture's from. So, you know, so we kind of, and then one of the drawings of, it's what I love about Insecure, I would be able to point at people and like, here's a group of people that we don't know our origin. And so we are very American. We are our own, you know, background. And so I'm always fascinated by people who know where they came from and like just one generation away, right? And I mean, do you think that lays into your work at all? Do you feel being the daughter of an immigrant? Because it pops up whenever I always notice that on people's biography, like they mention that they're like, oh, first generation. So I'm like, so how does that inform your work? Does it? Or have you been here so long that, and yeah, so how so? I'm curious if there is a way, is it the view of the world?
I think you nailed it. It's the view of the world. I'll be honest, like when we first immigrated here, my parents were very adamant that we learn the language, assimilate ASAP, you know, blend in, be a part of, you know, America. And so my brother and I, being overachiever little kids, you know, we did that. But after a while, you know, you kind of start to realize that you don't quite feel a part of this world or the other world. Like I remember we went back to Taiwan as family. And I felt very out of place there too. So I was like, well, this is very interesting. I don't belong there. And I don't quite know if I belong here. And so I started kind of like really wanting to learn like why I felt that way. And, you know, why don't we eat Chinese food every day? Why are we eating McDonald's? Like, have we assimilated to that degree? So it kind of began like a, like another exploration, if you will, of like learning how to cook Chinese food and, you know, eating a lot more Chinese food, like seeking out, the Asian community, whether it's, you know, just in my personal life or my career. And it's been really incredible the last decade. I think I've, have come across a lot more Asian American filmmakers, as well as other, you know, filmmakers that are people of color, women of color. And I honestly say, I feel a lot more comfortable there because I feel like we all kind of feel the same way. Like you don't quite belong in any particular world. And I think having that going into your work, I think you approach it with a much more open mind because you can kind of see and maybe infuse some nuance into the character's performance that isn't just so one-dimensional.
Yeah. It's interesting. You just articulated something that it never really occurred to me as somebody with a mixed heritage where I've never felt like I belonged in the white culture and never felt belonged in the black culture. And it never occurred to me that a first generation person that they would feel that way as well. The first generation American has that similar experience that I do. So that's very fascinating. Okay. Hey, before I let you go here on Black and a Half, we have 7 questions that we always ask people before the first time they're on here. To get to know them a little better. Okay, it's the world Black and a Half world famous 7 questions. They're not hard. Don't worry. Number one, what are you most nerdy about?
Oh my gosh, this is so funny. I'm most nerdy about other really well established editors.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yes. Just the other day, you know, it was actually Tuesday, the day that I was nominated. I went into work and, you know, not thinking anything, and everybody pretty much stays in their room because of COVID. So,
yeah.
But then I, you know, had a knock on my door, and it was Alan Baumgarten, and I know him by his face because he's been in the press and he's, you know, been Oscar nominated, and his work is incredible. And he's like, "Hi, I'm Alan. I just wanted to introduce myself." And I just turned into this completely like bumbling idiot. I was like, "Oh my God, I love your work and what you do." So that's when I get super nerdy, when I come across an editor whose work I admire.
I love it. All right. Number two, what's something that you love to eat?
Oh gosh. Honestly, this is really embarrassing, but I love chicken wings. I'm a huge fan of chicken wings.
There is no shame in that. There is no shame. I love chicken wings too. It's one of the things I collect. You know, not physically, that'd be gross, but that I love to try. When I go to a new place, I got to try their chicken wings. We got to just try them, see what they're like. Okay.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
I need to write them down so I remember, but I always go like, oh, I think I like them at this place.
Yeah, there should be a book, the best chicken wing across the world, right?
Yeah. Number three, what's something that you love to drink?
Oh, gosh. I mean, it depends. I think.
Do you have a go-to that's in your fridge that you stock?
It's super boring.
That's
it's
fine.
Lime or lemon flavored LaCroix. That's my go-to, you know, and sometimes at night, maybe a bourbon or something.
Okay. Oh, nice. My seltzer game was strong for a long time. 2 years, I just drank seltzer. I think that was it, instead of just water. Okay, number four, what kind of music do you love?
Oh, that really varies. You know, when I'm on Insecure, it's everything that we're listening to kind of audition for the show, right? So it's a lot of fun. A lot of LA artists and hip hop, and you know, that's just phenomenal. And right now I'm on a movie that's set in the 80s, so I've kind of been doing a deep dive into everything 80s. So.
Yeah.
So it kind of changes depending on the project, because I throw myself into it completely.
So your Spotify playlist is just crazy. Like,
it's
just all
over the place. Yeah.
All right. Number five, what do you love to create?
I love to create stories that either make people laugh until they cry or cry until they just can't anymore. I really do. I enjoy doing that.
As long as tears are involved somewhere.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. Number six, what's a game you love to play?
You know, right now I'm really into Carcassonne. I have this online game that I play with a group of friends, like all the time. The minute we're done with the virtual game, we're on Board Game Arena, and so for a while it was Sushi Go, and another while it was like Potion Explosion, but now we're like all Carcassonne all day. So
okay. I'm gonna need to look that one up. I don't know that
one. Oh, super fun.
Okay. And Board Game Arena, that's an online site. Okay.
Yeah Carcassonne, and basically they took all the board games and put it online. And it was brilliant because exactly, right? It's like I found this at the beginning of the pandemic, and it was genius because now I can still play games with my friends and not have to worry about like, are we going to get each other sick, you know?
Yeah.
So we've been doing that since like April 2020.
Oh my God, you may have changed my life. I'm going to go there after the show and check this out. Okay, last question. In 100 years, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
Oh, this is so hard. I have to get back to you on that one. I'm not sure. Maybe I hope that someone just reads my biography and says, you know what? She didn't come from a Hollywood family. She came from another country, came to America, and somehow was, you know, able to make a go of it. So I hope that's what I remember.
No, hey, yeah. I mean, that's fantastic. Isn't that what we at one time said was the dream here? That anybody could make anything of themselves coming from whatever, for whatever reason. I think that's a great legacy. It's the American story. It's great. Hey, Nina, thanks so much for coming on. Congratulations again on your nomination, and we'll be here at the Black and a Half family. We will be rooting for you.
Thank you so much.
Okay. But yeah, thanks again, and have a merry Black and a Half.
Join us. Impressive. Join us. Impressive.